Well, when I had the three presentations, I think they've been very covered a very broad area, and I think a very helpful area as well. And so now I think you've got the chance to ask your question. You've covered all three.
What I'd like to know, Department West, that we have a lot here. We've had quite a lot of young, enthusiastic families come along, and they work like hell, we do this, that and the other for so many months, and then gradually it goes off and off, and it's not persistent. You know, children want to do something else, go basketing at the weekends or something like that, and they're just a waste of time. You know, they're full of bright ideas and do-gooders, but they don't, when it comes to actually doing it themselves, they will not persist at it. How do you get them to persist? Or is it changing all the time?
That's a good question. I try to get them involved in different parts of what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look at systems that will make it easier and make it easier for them and easier. Because my main worry is weeds.
Yeah.
And I've had them last year help me weeding. What I've changed the system this year, I'm using plastic over the beds.
Yeah.
And planting onions in the plastic.
Yeah.
So I've eradicated the problem of weeds from that area.
Yeah.
But I try to make it... Well, they find it entertaining. We had our first planting day on the 7th of March, and 16 turned up.
Yeah.
And they loved it.
But how many years?
This is my first year.
Oh, I see.
But I try to have something entertaining for them. Mm. Once a month we had a bonfire.
Mm.
And we made a pizza oven out of clay. Mm.
So you're really becoming a community leader. Mm. In your own life.
I suppose. Mm. I am, yes.
Yeah.
This is something I found very difficult at the beginning.
Yeah.
When I formed it, because I was leaving them to manage it.
Yeah.
To tell me really, because
yeah.
I wanted to stay in the background as just a farmer. But yes, they do look at me too.
You delete them.
But I don't know anything about farming. Growing vegetables.
Yeah.
I only know how to grow potatoes.
Yeah.
But since last April 2010, I've learned to grow all these things.
Yeah.
By their help.
Yeah.
And we have a mentor group that advise me what to grow.
Yeah.
But I think it was well done. The people who actually are in the community begin slowly to understand what it is about growing and actually you being a good gardener.
Yeah.
Because you're actually taking from the very beginning and they understand such things as where you're going to plant and the right time you get to plant and then go on with regard to weeds and actually anything else that affects them, and you take them through, and eventually they get to this stage when this is the product.
But they do.
But it just doesn't happen, and therefore it's a real education. I think you're talking about Tony as well.
Yeah.
People come along and want to have a long, great idea, and then a few months later the weeds are all there, and then things are left in a state that's not very helpful.
Yeah, it's very unhelpful to the next person.
Right.
It is. One thing with this I'm finding is that having them on my farm, it helps them understand the farm and the farmer and what he's up against.
Yeah.
And he's working with the farmer. And this I find
good.
The most important thing.
Yeah.
Because through all this and the technology and everything, and we're running out of food, what you're forgetting is the farmer, and we're losing them.
But I have an FDU farm in West Wales, but there's some areas of the country, and like round here now, where the farms are becoming very large, And in many cases, the farmer isn't farming it. All the potatoes around here are contract grown, and every 10 years somebody, you know, comes across the chest for the nematodes and say, oh, well, we'll have that field this year. And the whole cycle is changing. The way it's done, because the cost of machinery, you need to do it.
Cost of machinery, yeah. And how much they're getting for what they produce.
Yes, yeah. Because
the price now is the same as it was. Yeah,
all the people who want to grow their own stuff still want to go to the supermarket and buy the Carrots cornflakes, you know, knock down prices. And you can't have it both ways.
I mean, most of us around here, if you're right, our farms are very big now.
They are very big.
And therefore, you know, they're really all the machinery is probably in one place, and the whole lot. And McCain's, for example, all the potatoes going here, it's McCain's, it's this time, it's somebody else, you know, at this time. But you can see huge fields
that they're owned by men, in a sense.
And that's why. You're missing out what's happening here.
Yeah.
People don't understand where the actual food comes from and all the implications.
And how they could grow it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And at a much cheaper cost and much more enjoyable as well.
Yeah.
Than just going through.
Well, it can be more interesting because these people can. I mean, we used to break crops and grow mustard after the early crops to get some green manure in it and get rid of all the shrubs and things as a result.
Yeah.
And there's a lot can be done like that. And the old fashioned, in this study, talk about growing mixed crops, that when I was in agriculture in the 50s, 60s and 70s, I sold tons and tons of mixed crops, but that's all gone now because the harvesting techniques are different. Yeah. And the way the product is sold, rather than being the arable farmer's not using it himself on the farm, crushing it up for his calf. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What were you growing together?
Well, they're growing big peas and oats and peas, barley and oats and vetches and all that sort of thing.
So one of the other things happening at the moment is the price of land.
Yeah.
Going up very, very fast.
So yeah.
Apparently, it's about £17,500 an acre. A hectare now, which is about £6,500 an acre. £7,500 an acre. So it's doubled in the last 5 years. So getting established as a farmer, or even as a market gardener, is actually quite a...
And also to get the return to justify the capital. You know, I had a farmer who had a dairy herd in the Fylde, and he made friends with a man who had a shoe shop in Blackpool, and he reckoned with just his herd of cows he could have 4 shoe shops the same amount of capital involved in one herd of cows. He didn't have to work 7 days a week, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock at night, milking. And he could have got a much better return on his money. And a lot of it has to be the return on capital, because staff have to be paid, or they have to pay for the tractor, or other equipment, and all the chemicals which are getting, you know, with the petrochemical thing going bananas, we only need a revolution in Saudi, we'll all be back on bicycles. So there's lots of for and against in all these things. And whether GM comes or goes, but they've got to have research in it. And in actual fact, what's happening there will not affect the allotments here, because these allotments have had potatoes grown on them since 1920. So it's over 80 years. So you can't grow your own seed the next year. You've got to have new crops. And also a lot of us, we take the flower, pinched flowers out as they're coming out to increase the yield of the crop in the ground, so it won't affect us as such. You know, the because people won't be growing the crop again. You know, some people do keep in certain parts of the country their own seed. They don't buy new seed in, but you'd have to here. So you wouldn't get a crop.
That would be the best. Well,
there's only one person up there who's, that should be named, who grows that stuff in. You can guarantee that if, when the is get blight, it's time to start spraying. You know, you can see it.
Well, that would be the best way to protect yourself against the GM contamination from the sphere would be to pinch your flowers out as they come up.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Otherwise, with the Zira in some varieties, you do get viable seeds in the berries.
Yeah.
And if they drop onto the soil, they will come up as potatoes the following year. So, you could end up, in that way, you could end up.
It wouldn't be eaten. That day they would be cleared, though, wouldn't they?
Sorry?
They'd all be clear in the cultivation.
Well, you always get a few tiny little pea-sized potatoes that come up as boxes. Gatekeepers, they call them for some reason.
Yeah.
Never quite worked out why, but that's what they call them with potatoes. Yeah.
I was wondering if any of the people who've spoken know and have experienced the people in farmers growing crops on large scales in America or in Egypt and in India, what the effect of that has had. I don't want to watch GM crops now. What I see as a problem in India, by the way, it's not that large scale for a farmer. Because quite often it's still small farmers, but they all will have, because Monsanto and sort of Myco and Myco, what is the other the company where Monsanto is involved in India, they go around sort of and do a lot of selling in the communities, and therefore a lot of the farmers will have bought the same seeds. So all together that makes a lot of the farmers then growing the same GM cotton crop, for example. And that turned out to be a problem in one area, or in Pakistan as well, where then they had all of a sudden that mealybug. You know, that the problem is if there's one weakness in a certain variety or in this GM crop, and the pathogen or the insect or whatever, the pest will find out about it, then it just runs through the whole thing. And that's what happened. And in India, a lot of farmers then, for example, had to buy a lot of additional pesticides in order to save their crops, because they'd already spent so much money on the seeds. So they wanted some return. You might have heard in India, unfortunately, a lot of farmers don't see a way out any longer, like out of their debts, unless they kill themselves, because then the government will pick up, in a way, the debt for the family. So there's a lot of suicides amongst farmers who got so indebted in the treadmill of expensive seeds, then all the pesticides, and then they can't continue getting loans because they don't have anything to set against it. So they lose their farms, lose everything first, and then they say, but I need to keep that little plot for my wife and my kids, and then they commit suicide. It's not just with GM. I mean, with other farmers it's happened as well, but GM is right in that trend as well, which is, of course, quite horrendous. And I think what... Is it Tony, your name?
Yeah.
What you were saying is just so crucial, like the right price, that the public should pay the right price for the crops. Whether it's cotton or whether it is potatoes or whether it doesn't matter, or milk production, because then we wouldn't have that push to cut corners all the time in order to just save a bit as the farmer. And I find it really problematic how also the public is basically encouraged by the politicians to, to believe in cheap food and to go for that. And I think that really needs a turning around. And that's why I really like your scheme there, that people understand what farming is, where things come from. You know, we have kids in Germany, like, they think potatoes, they think they just come in plastic bags. They don't even know they grow out there in the fields any longer, right? Or other kids think spaghetti actually grow on the trees. I mean, it's just this kind of alienation, and I feel if we don't understand as a whole community, sort of the importance of food production and doing it so the farmer can live properly, you know, then we come to a point where it's too late, because we've lost a lot of the varieties, like what happened in South America with a large scale. I think it is actually like very big business ventures that are there now, because also there's not many farmers left as such, because it's more robot farming, because you need to know basically what to put in your tank mix, and it's huge machinery, and it's led by airplanes, they spray as well a lot, and it's just real these business cooperatives, but quite often even owned from outside the country, because there's such a good price on the market for soya, and therefore the small farmers or the local farmers, there's nothing left for them in it. And some of them leased out their land, and some left altogether, and some hang in there, but there's now some court cases as well, and some just had to pack up because their farm continuously also was being sprayed accidentally, but it was like because of the wind drift, because all the other fields. So there was a lot of like small kids being impacted with a lot of skin problems, and one boy died as well in it. So then of course they leave the land, and of course all that goes in the wrong direction, I think. But it's not only a local problem any longer. It's a local problem, yes, that one can help, but it's international as well.
There's no. It's all a matter of education. There's only one school in the whole of Britain now that has its own farm. And there's somebody said they came from Lancaster. Well, there's a school at Lancaster where they have their own farm. And it's the only one in the whole country. And, you know, the average person thinks, you know, milk comes in a carton from a factory.
Yeah. There's a huge gap. Yeah. People don't understand the connections any longer.
Yeah.
And whoever shop they go to, whether it's a clothes shop or a car shop, or anything, doesn't matter, whatever they're buying, they don't understand where this all comes from.
No.
And actually the resources that have been used to put all these things together. Mm-hmm. And that's really it's a huge problem, and it's going to be becoming more intense, isn't it?
Yeah.
As we've become as well.
And they just think it's their life. They just think it's their life to have.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one of the tendencies now is to have very specialised farming, so you don't you just grow soybeans or you just grow potatoes, because the point you made, you have to invest so much in the machinery to do it. So,
Well, soy is a real case in Portugal. All the fish have come out of the sea, so there's no fish but protein to put in the animal feeds. So the feed manufacturer had to use soya as a replacement for fish meal, because they couldn't use meat and bone meal because the risk of anthrax and foot and mouth. So soya has become a replacement of what used to come out of the sea.
And how is the cheapest protein?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's quite interesting also with soya that the farming methodology now being used like in Brazil and Argentina with the GM is also like this, like this no-till part of it.
Yeah.
It's the way that all the weeds are kept in bay with the herbicide. One downside of that is that the so-called Asian rust therefore is developing, because the rotations aren't there and it's not dug under, so it develops and now that drifts northwards.
And then you get the dust bowl effect like that in the America, in the Midwest states in America in the 1920s.
And I mean, we haven't spoken about one aspect tonight, which was the health aspect. And I just feel like it is important to remember that with all the ideas that are around, none of that actually has been tested for sufficiently for health effects. Like when we are talking about this blight resistant or the nematode resistant, even to the effect that some of the crops which are already on the market, colleagues of mine in France, when they managed to get the data from Monsanto, through also court procedures, because we scientists often also don't get the raw data, they managed it and they actually could find that if an animal is fed on it, because like we are not eating much of it, also in the US people are not eating much of it, it's mostly an animal feed so far. But if one really does the trials for proper time and keeps the data right, then actually he could find out, that's a Seralini's rule, that you will find a difference in gender.
Yeah.
A different impact on the female as on male. Like the kidneys are impacted by some, the liver by the other. But the interesting thing is how Monsanto had packaged this. They said, like, you know, because we look at all these animals as a one unit.
Yeah.
So we don't distinguish between male and female, and therefore this factor was insignificant.
Yeah.
But if you actually look at it, because of course organisms' bodies are different, you know, and different hormones are present, so there are different interactions in systems. Yeah. And especially if you have something that is eaten to, in larger quantities.
Yeah.
So there it was clear that it has an impact, but yet it's just it's so difficult to get the material for our scientists or the data, and
so I mean things keep coming out. There was some years ago the case of the taxi driver in Singapore who developed a craze for chicken liver pate, and at the time they were using arsenicals in the animal feeds, with the residue got deposited in the liver.
Yeah.
And because he had such mass quantities of it, he got arsenic poisoning.
Well, I'm very conscious of time, and people come from a long way to go to get home medicine. I find this very, very fascinating. You've actually opened all sorts of doors, you know, this evening. I know it's about GM, so you've actually, it's a wider thing in GM, isn't it? Than you, because actually it's about the survival of the planet in many ways. If you really become quite, say, you mentioned let it run away, that's where we're going in the future, because we've got to sustain this planet, but we can only sustain it in certain ways, otherwise we'll need it in a very negative direction. That's what you've been thinking all evening.
Well, some say the way we are living, we actually live as if we had 7 extra planets to grow things on. That's how we're using stuff up. We just don't have them lined up, so eventually, they'll catch up with us, our children.
Does anyone want to say anything else? Speakers, by the way.
Just because obviously time is limited, I'd love to hear if people have any other questions or any other ideas about their experiences here. That would be really wonderful. But please feel free to take a book and you want to take home to a few parts of it that you want.
I think I find what you've thought about Del Catherine in terms of how you actually involve people in growing. Wouldn't you, Tony?
Yeah.
It's thank you very much. It's a great thing. Because then you actually begin, and just instead of just talking about GM people, because it's something that we get so much thrown at them, all sorts of things every day of the life in terms of media, and GM is just one other factor amongst it, which is not really understood by the normal person. I mean, every year there's something comes out that tells you you mustn't do this or you mustn't do that, and people say, well, what will I do next? You know, and it's quite depressing, I think, for some people to hear things like that. And it's not, I don't want people to feel depressed. I want them to actually be positive and be able to say, right, what can we do to actually improve the well-being, as it were, for the common good, in the day, so it's about the common rule, it's the common wealth we're talking about, that we're trying to do. It's not just locally, we're talking about nationally and internationally as well. And I think that's one of the ways forward. So I hope this actually gives us some encouragement to do that. And certainly in this village we can do that. If we can't do anything else in the present time, we've been talking about that. And I think I'm in Tony's remarks about those young people who actually like to start with the allotments.
Yeah.
We've really got to find a way of developing their interest, that it's not just lasting 2 or 3 months or a couple of years and then they give up. You know? We want them really to develop this, because they've got their children, and the children are very important part of it.
Yeah.
The children nowadays have got no idea very often about what's happening in terms of things in Europe. The children in your area will not even understand what if they belong to your community.
Well, I hope they will, because one thing I remember is that I thought I'd have an older generation children. But what I'm finding is that I'm having young families.
Yes, I guess.
And that really is very encouraging.
And I think this is very interesting, because in Bramley, we have one of the youngest populations in the whole area. You know, in the census of 2001 or 2002, we had 28% of our population in Bramley were under 19, which is quite high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 28, which is quite high, and obviously we've got to go over the last 10 years, but nonetheless, there are lots of families, and I think it's very important that we actually find ways of being in touch with them as well. And I suppose none of them really have given any thought to what you've been talking about tonight. But some of them have. I mean, I think it's an education here for you. You know a great deal about what's happening in the world of horticulture and agriculture and everything else, and because of your own interests. But you actually have a great deal of thinking going on too about what's happening internationally as well.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we do live in this world, which is international. And if you went to people and said, where do you go for your shopping? And they say, well, we go to Morrison's, or we go to Marks and Spencer's, or wherever I happen to go. They don't know where all the things they're buying in those shops have come from, and how they've been produced, and what impact it's got on the ecology and the health of the whole place. So I think that's some of the goal.
Make interesting projects,
couldn't it,
also for kids to find out
where
it's from.
Well, I think it's something we'll pursue, I think, and we are doing things. I mean, we're going to look at the environment in our area over the next 2 or 3 months anyway, and we have a thing called Beating the Vines, and we'll beat the vines of the parish, but we're going to do things like how you travel, taking people on bike rides, and how you walk and everything else, and instead of just getting in the car and doing all these things. But also we're going to do, we've got a lovely churchyard here, it's a Saxon churchyard, and it has about 90 to 100 different plants in it, which have been done on, and we actually encourage the young people to do a churchyard trail, working on this side. So that's another way of thinking about that. But at the same time, we should be actually saying, how do you work out where things have come from in the first instance? And it's involving other organisations like Wildlife Trust now. And we happen to have one of the guys who's the Wildlife Trust organiser for.
I think they are starting some allotments at the village school this summer.
Yes, they are. Yeah. We need to do that as well. Mm-hmm. And that's another possibility, you see.
Yeah.
We need to really engage our young people in that way. Because if they're engaged, the parents will be, I think, fine as well.
Just one thing you could do is do a shared allotment. Have a group doing the allotment, and an older person to guide them. I've seen that done before, because when one group or two persons do it, they get daunted with it, but if there's a group doing it, they're all supporting each other.
That'd be interesting thought.
There's
allotments that are free as well, haven't there? There's always a few allotments that are spare.
Yeah.
And the kind of ones you're talking about, who have got interested and then sell around.
Yeah.
And I could name one of you as well, 22. You could name them back to me as well. Yeah. Good.
Very interesting.
Yeah, well, I think I'd like to thank all of you who made a contribution tonight. I'd like to thank Liz and Rebecca for setting this whole process up. I know we haven't done a big turnout, but I hope you don't feel this has been, it hasn't been a waste, because some of us have gained a great deal from what you said tonight, and we will continue to think about it as well. And I'd like to thank, obviously, the three speakers, because they've been very good indeed. And whatever else has happened, we've learned a great deal from the people who have come here tonight, and we will not let the subject go away, and we'll keep watching us as well. So thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.